open up for that?
Once I hit about Akron, then I was not cold anymore.
That's Ohio for you. All right. Yo, yo, everybody. Here we are on another episode of the Mind Body Marathon. And today's show, we're going to talk about lifting and strategies for lifting just for in general. We're actually really going to shoot from the hip on this one. We really talked too much prior. We are back in the studio, though. So if you're watching, you're seeing pretty much the same view, but it's a different room. So, and on today's show, we have Dr. Sam Snyder.
Hello, hello.
Who's our resident lifter. He's bigger than all of us, so he can arm wrestle everybody down. And there's Jared Bugaj, who is also stronger than me, and but also emaciated, too.
Thank you.
More distance runner build. But anyways, this will be a fun topic because, you know, obviously like kind of our forte is running. And I think, you know, a lot of people see that as a direct opposition, like cardio as a direct opposition to lifting, which we don't necessarily see it that way. And, you know, just curious to get your guys' thoughts in general on lifting for performance, whether it be for running or any other sport. And then we'll kind of just go from there.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty conclusive evidence-wise that strength training, lifting, that it's basically good for all of your bodily systems. I mean, it, unless you are way over the top with it, I mean, it can only do you good. I mean, your bones, your hormones, you know, maintaining a healthy, you know, appearance and body composition, and, you know, especially with like aging adults, and having
confidence,
that strength training in there, you know, just to keep the bone density and the muscles woken up and, you know, active. And
yeah,
that's how we burn our calories, is through metabolic activity. And resistance training is really good at raising our body temperature.
Yeah. What do you think, Kat?
I think especially talking about it from a perspective of this is a running podcast primarily. It's all about walking that fine line of how do you kind of squeeze out all of the benefits of lifting and put that into your training program without just being like fried the next day.
Yeah.
Because running is going to be, if that's your number one priority is performing in that and getting faster, then you really have to kind of be smart about how you program that in.
Well, let's talk about that, because generally speaking, what I would do. So first and foremost, I, in my opinion, I don't necessarily think lifting carries the same weight for everyone at every age. Meaning, I think it's really important for adolescents to lift, to create a great foundation of muscle activation, of bone density, of, you know, general joint stability, regardless of any sport, football, hockey, running, doesn't matter. Like, I think it's just smart overall for a better aging life. Meaning, you know, if you lift decent when you're young, you create a good foundation for muscle development, joint stability, bone density. That carries, even if you don't lift the rest of your life, that'll carry some benefit. But however, I will say that when I was in the heart of my training, like when I was running at a decently high level, like really elite level, I didn't necessarily feel like lifting was super critical to keep year round. I thought that it was really beneficial in the base phases and when I kind of had some downtime to really kind of lean into it. But, you know, when you're in a heavy training cycle and you're running, you know, 100 plus miles a week, probably not the greatest stimulus at that time. In those rare moments where you might catch an athlete in that instance, lifting kind of takes a back burner, but still kind of resumes a little bit more the forefront in the base phase or the off season. But as you get older and, you know, 35, 40 plus, I think it kind of then becomes more important again. I think at that point, especially for males, your hormones, your testosterone starts to drop. Lifting will keep that elevated. You know, obviously you want to maintain ample muscle mass going into aging, into the 60s and 70s. And lifting, you know, for a couple of decades is going to do that best for you. So I think it carries a little bit more weight at that point. I don't know, thoughts?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. One of the biggest benefits to lifting that you can reap is the release of if you read any of the research, they say exercise-induced growth hormone response. So growth hormone is what is made endogenously in your body to repair muscles, connective tissue, bones, and essentially grow back bigger and stronger, which we all want, obviously. And especially from a running perspective, you want your tendons and your muscles to withstand force in, you know, as much of an efficient way as possible. So that's very much more important as you start getting older, because once you hit, do you know the age where like your bone density, essentially you're going to peak, and then from there it's just very, very slow decline.
This is like 40s.
Sure.
45.
Yeah, you start to lose something like 1% per year after that or something like that.
So the higher growth hormone that you can release, that you can get from lifting, you know, say you're in your 40s and 50s, the better, because you want to try to stave that off as much as possible.
For sure. And I think from a running specific standpoint, you know, you can almost stimulate adaptations a little bit more with strength training. So kind of the effect there, where you stack on, you know, a running workout or an easy run, then you do a little bit of lifting, not enough to energetically fatigue you, but enough to have that hormonal response to further stimulate your adaptations for running. It's like, you know, kind of priming a pump with that. It's just, in my experience, it's always a question of when do you do your strength training? Yeah. You know, it's like, if you put it on a recovery day, well, what's the goal of a recovery day? It's to recover, not to break the body down even further.
Yeah, I think this, that to fully answer this question, I think it kind of comes down to what type of lifting are we doing. Mm-hmm. So back to Sam's point earlier, I just looked it up. It's about 25 to 30 bone mass peaks. Mayo Clinic says 30. So beyond that, it starts to fall.
Okay.
You know, I think with the biggest thing is if you are looking for general fitness, you just want to have like a nice complementary of activities that are conducive and work well with each other and complementary, you would have some sort of cardio, which running, cycling, swimming, whatever it could be, that elliptical, rowing, whatever. You obviously want some component of strength training. And if you're going to follow the research, you're probably going to have some component of HIIT strength training, which tends to carry the highest benefit, the most bang for your buck in terms of time. You know, a 30, 45 minute HIIT workout can mimic some much more longer demanding workouts, have much more benefit long-term. You know, we're talking about, I mean, there's just countless benefits from that. So we can explore that moving forward. But, and then in addition to that, you should also have some sort of like range of motion, you know, yoga, kind of like general loosening sessions. So you have a nice balance, right? You have your cardio, your strength training, but also general body movement. So that might look like, it could be as unique as like Tai Chi or Capoeira or yoga, or it could just be general stretching, something like that. And then, but if we're getting into sports specific lifting, well, then that matters quite a bit, because if you're playing football, like your main goal is, depending on the position, obviously to build some mass, build some bulk. That's going to be different than a distance runner. A distance runner is not looking to build mass or bulk. They're looking to increase neurological density of the muscle, but not gain any weight. So it changes a little bit. So they can maybe have a little bit of HIIT training, but they're probably going to focus a little bit more on controlled efforts in that instance. So it tends to be easier to layer that in on a distance running segment, because a lot of lifting for distance runners will kind of almost essentially look a little bit like somewhat rehab and somewhat lifting. Whereas if you go and you look at the lifting program for a football player, it's going to look like lifting. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So in a distance runner, you might like deadlift and back squat, and then maybe do some like calisthenic kind of stuff like push-ups, sit-ups, and some general rehab, but you're not hitting a ton of lifts, you know? But I think as you get older, like for instance, me, I'm now 43, I have genuinely felt the bit. I really felt like my body fell off a cliff at like 38. I felt like I got really weak, really quick. And you know, my grip strength went down, my general back strength went down. It was just crazy. So I've noticed now, like in my limited running that I do, if I run like 15, 20 miles a week. I mean, I really almost essentially don't have to do any speed work if I am lifting, because it's just about maintaining muscle mass there. And I notice so much more benefit with regards to that. But like you're saying, Jared, if you are actually doing like HIIT workouts, like say you're doing like a CrossFit style workout and you're a distance runner and you're training for a marathon, it's going to be very difficult to marriage those two things. Can be done. The CrossFit strength and conditioning world will make it seem like it should be done, but it necessarily shouldn't. You know, it's like those are things you want to maybe like layer in on base phases.
Yeah.
Not sport specific stuff.
And you know, when I was in season at Walsh, I tried, if I could, to do my strength work on, you know, like a tempo day, or like doing marathon paced work, or just like easier paces, but not really dipping into like VO2 max or, you know, repetition work. And, you know, then going into the gym and lifting, because I still had the energy. I mean, but if we were doing like, you know, I pace 1K repeats, it's like, nope. the neurological system is just fried.
Yeah, the neuro is fried. You know, I mean, that's a really good point. Like if we looked at like bodybuilders, I mean, they spend a lot of time in the gym. I mean, because they're wanting a lot of eccentric load on the muscle. They want a lot of time under tension. They're just doing a lot of high reps, a lot of volume. If we look at a power lifter, now they're kind of just generally born strong. So they're not really looking to develop strength in the same way, but what they're looking to do is develop neurological gains. So they're going to be in the gym 20, 30 minutes. Their workouts are going to be kind of quick. And I feel like that's kind of the mentality that you should have. Like if you're playing a sport where you do need mass, well then think like a bodybuilder. You're going to spend a little bit more time in the gym, like hockey or football. If you're a distance runner, you don't need that mass, then what you should do is your lifts should be fairly quick, actually. So like you're saying, Jared, like it's a kind of an easy thing to tack on to like a workout day, because you're not in the gym much more than 20 or 30 minutes, really.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, then the next day, you can just use that as your recovery day.
Yeah, really
in
rest.
Its entirety.
What do you think, Sam?
I would agree. I've definitely made the mistakes myself experimenting with.
Yeah.
You know, if my background is I kind of got into running two and a half years ago, thanks to Jared in chiropractic school. But I, other than middle school cross country, my background was very minimal. So I've experimented with, you know, how do I incorporate lifting into kind of training for half marathons, and made the mistakes of like, you know, I'm going to train like, you know, I train because my high school football coach told me to, you know, we're in there for an hour, so I guess I should lift for an hour. And
yeah,
it's like, you're just dead. Your next couple runs are just horrible. So I would definitely agree that, you know, your minimum should be like 10 minutes. And really, you should probably be maxing out like 40 would really be probably too much. Like 10 to 30 minutes is all you need.
Now, what would you say are the most poignant lifts for distance runners?
I've got mine. I would say the single leg RDL is my favorite one.
Yeah.
All right.
In terms of how it makes you feel?
Yeah, it makes my butt feel confident.
Boom.
from a performance side, though, you're training balance, because running is one, you know, bound from one leg to another. But the amount of hip stability that it trains, so it, you know, it cleaned up my IT band syndrome when that was kind of flared up, because it was all just coming from my hip was not stable and wasn't absorbing load.
Yeah.
I'd land on it, I would get fatigued. You know, at that time when I was as a beginner, it was like 5-6 miles, like IT band is just like on fire. So single leg RDL at a relatively kind of heavy, like 5-6 out of 10, like perceived exertion.
Yeah, I think like, and that's a good point, is that you know, like, because that could be used as a rehab exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. and it kind of like a lot of times, like some of the lifting programs might actually be a little bit more of an enhanced rehab look. Like you're obviously going to load a little bit more weight, like you're saying, you want to keep the kind of reps a little bit lower, weight a little bit higher, perceived exertion higher. It's like, that's a decent load right there. What's your favorite?
Yeah. I think the RDL, single leg RDL, but for a slightly different reason. So, you know, as Sam said, you know, it really loads up the posterior chain, but you can challenge it in multiple different ways. You know, you can do a barbell single leg RDL. You can do, you know, single side, like contralateral pattern loaded single leg RDL. So that would look like, you know, weight in the right hand, but your stance leg is your left.
Yeah.
And, you know, that challenges your transverse plane. And that's, you know, kind of how we oscillate as runners back and forth. So it's mimicking a core exercise, and you're loading up, you know, your glute med, the posterior chain, hamstrings, glutes.
One thing that I really love about that exercise is that it's forcing your body how to train the hamstring under load, mm-hmm. meaning the hamstring doesn't do well when it has to concentrically contract.
Yes.
It does very well at fighting eccentric contraction and snapping down. So like when your leg kicks out in front of you when you're running, it helps to essentially guide it down. It's essentially a guide wire that guides it, the foot under the center of mass when the leg is in front of you. And we all kind of think of it as like active on the back end, like from push off to kick in your butt on the back end. But technically, it shouldn't be super active then. It should be most active when it's in front of you, which is what the RDL is mimicking.
Yes. And, you know, if you're really advanced and really stable, then you can even progress that to, you know, an RDL clean and press, where you bring the, you know, you clean it to a runner stance, a tall stance, and then you can drive the weight up above your head. So now you're working full body. You're incorporating.
Yeah, it's almost like a thruster.
Yeah, the upper body mechanics too. And, you know, that's great for, you know, just about any, you know, high level runner, you know, any high level athlete, even, you know, if you're trying to really build that explosion and hip extension, that's
plus also like
if you're exercise.
If you're trying to pick somebody up off the ground and then put them over your head, like in WWE wrestling and spin them around, that's really good for that.
Jared, if that got any more complicated, I was going to say like, we're going to have to add all these like side videos.
Yeah. I know. He's just adding complexity to it.
I didn't dress to work out today. Like, I didn't know that was part of it.
Hey, man, you're rapping on my favorite exercise.
Yeah.
Well, hex bar deadlifts, too. I mean,
well, that was going to be mine. So mine's the simple one. I think there was a pretty profound study that I read years ago that said that one of the best ways to keep testosterone elevated in males is deadlifting, just period. It's, you know, just recruits the exact right muscles you need. Back strength, glute strength, coordination between the triple extension and triple flexion. But you're not going all the way down, you know, in the same sort of way that you're loading a spine. The hex bar is a little bit better because it, especially if you're taller, like we are, like it, you don't have to quite go so low to the ground to challenge the knees and the ankles quite as much, but you still get the same benefit. I know Ryan Flaherty got pretty famous there for a minute because he just did the concentric hex bar lifts, which was eliminating the dropping of it or the lowering of it, and you would just drop the weight. So meaning he would have a hex bar and you would just lift it and then just drop it out of your hand, so you don't have to have the eccentric load of lowering the weight, which would then build the muscle, so that literally almost 100% of the gains were neurological, which I thought was really convenient or really cool. And he did that with a lot of really high-end sprinters and distance runners in USA Track and had some really good success with it. So I'm just kind of partial to that. I feel really good when I consistently deadlift, and I just feel like, one, it helps my back when I'm treating patients all day long, bending over patients all day long, and two, it's like you just feel real snappy after that. So I love it.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
So any final tidbits or points? I know we kind of like touched upon some different topics here, but I think just kind of wanted to explore the idea of lifting and how people should integrate it. And I think one of my main points that I wanted to make is don't necessarily feel bad if your lifting routine kind of looks like rehab a little bit and you're kind of just getting your body kind of caught up, meaning it's kind of like PT kind of exercises with maybe a little bit of weight. That's fine. That's a great starting point. And then obviously you can consult, you know, a licensed physician for kind of pursuing a little bit more challenging measures. But I think you know, in general, it's important for at some point during the week, if not multiple points during the week, that you address the musculoskeletal system.
Yeah. I would agree. I think at least the way I kind of would set up a treatment plan with a runner here is, you know, once we're getting them out of whatever acute pain they're in, like visit, you know, the last couple of visits, you know, we're really trying to set them up with kind of transforming our rehab time into, you know, I'm not going to call it personal training, but like sending them home with essentially what that would be. And I think that can be a really good service that, you know, we kind of offer to people, is that we're able to say, you know, look, we got you out of pain. We showed you what kind of the rehab is, and this is the, you know, the performance cherry on top, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We call that rehab to performance. Shout out chiropractic school.
Yeah.
But, you know, as runners specifically, you know, we do a lot of repetitive tasks. We do the same movement over and over and over and over and over. And I feel like training the resilience of other tissues in different ways, it just gives you more movement variability and, you know, builds up resilient patterns in ways that you wouldn't get if you just ran, if you just did running all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we look at, you know, how much of your total capacity of movement you have, and running, you know, and especially easy running, it's very limited. Like you're not using a large range of motion in a daily run.
Yeah. And that's a good point. Like when we keep kind of talking about neurodevelopment, that's all we really mean. You could get neurodevelopment with plyometrics and fast hill sprints, but what it really means is that Jared's right. When you're running, when you're a distance runner, you're just recruiting the same sequence of muscles over and over. Well, a lot of times if you just do that for years on end and you don't really challenge yourself in other ways, the body is very efficient and very economical. It'll whittle that neurological output to that muscle all the way down to the most basic kind of recruitment it can get to get the same benefit. And that's a real problem, because if you're running a marathon, well, now all of a sudden you've limited the range of which you can recruit the muscles, because the nervous system has pulled back some of the nervous system output to that muscle. So for instance, if we lift or do plyometrics or hill sprints or something like that, now all of a sudden we create more neurological branches from the nerve, from the central nervous system to the muscle because of the high load. And you're not gaining muscle mass, but what you're gaining is neurological development. And that looks a lot of ways like dexterity. So like a great way to look at this is like your hand, like, you know, it's like if you learn how to play chopsticks, it's not like your hand got any stronger. It wasn't even anything about that. You just learned how to coordinate the sequence of the muscles. And that's what we're talking about. Lifting helps to create a larger neurological pull on the quad, the hammies, the calves, the glutes. So now all of a sudden, when you're in a marathon, that nerve can recruit a larger portion of those muscles and stave off fatigue so much more. But if you don't do that, then you don't necessarily even have that option, and you're just going to recruit the same patterns over and over. Yeah. So that's kind of a really important concept. So you're not gaining muscle mass, but you're gaining neurological development, and it's like dexterity to the muscle.
That's well put.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna actually go home and just listen to that before I go.
Yeah, put Enter Sandman on and then listen to that and get y'all jazzed up before lifting. All right, guys. Well, any final points?
Take your creatine.
Yeah.
Take your collagen 45 minutes before.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll all help.
Proper tendon health.
I like it. And if you have any questions, concerns with this, feel free to reach out. And then we'll kind of link to some other episodes that are similar mindsets and similar topics as well. But thanks again for listening to another great episode of the Mind Body Marathon. Dr. Leo here. Be sure to check out my new book, Faster Without Fail, Your Guide to Overcoming Injuries and Running Faster Than Ever. It is now available on Amazon. You could read reviews on the Amazon. You can check out what other people have said about it. But basically, if you want to revolutionize your running form and better understand how to stay injury-free within the sport, this is your guide. Feel free to reach out and let us know what you think of the book. I would love to hear your feedback. But again, please check it out on Amazon. Faster Without Fail. Appreciate it. Dr. Leo here. If you want to catch me in another setting, be sure to check out my YouTube page, Running Rehab, where you will find exercises on how to stay healthy with running, how to improve your running form, and a bunch of other tips and tricks on how to get over common injuries.